Welcome to the Urban Engine Podcast, propelling ideas forward.
Hey guys, welcome to Urban Engine Podcast number 14. I'm Matt McClellan. I'm here with Trey Sharp and Tony Eberhardt.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Hey, everyone.
Good morning, everyone. We are all caffeinated and ready to go this afternoon here.
Yeah.
First thing we want to chat about with you guys is super, super important. I think it really is the key in business to relationships over time and really the success of your business over the long term. And that's talking about like the art of the deal and looking for win-win scenarios. Trey, I know you brought this up initially here because I know you've been in a lot of maybe deal scenarios lately here, but we were chatting about before the podcast how, you know, we've had these experiences over time where, you know, you're structuring a deal and this comes in a lot of fashions, right? Like this is a business to consumer type thing, business to business type thing, your vendors, whatever. You're making deals all the time, right? Mm-hmm. And so you've got to find out what those deals look like to where they're mutually beneficial, because at the end of the day, if it's not beneficial for one party, it's going to feel strained, mm-hmm. or it's going to run into a wall somewhere. Yep. And that's not a good place to be, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think you always want to go into a deal, a potential deal. You don't want to think in like a zero sum, right? You don't want to go in thinking, well, for me to win, the guy on the other side of the table has to lose. I just think every time you do that, and I see people try to do that sometimes, they go in with this hard driving kind of negotiating style. It's still kind of famous. It's still common, I guess you'd say, in car sales and some other places that are, you know, or I know Tony recently bought a home. A lot of real estate can still be that way. Mm-hmm. But I think in a business, you tend to see, I'll actually be 40 next month in a week. I've seen over and over, you see the same people over and over in places you would not expect, right? Like in the community, they might be across the table today, but they could be working for your biggest partner or competitor or potential customer next. I think doing deals where everybody feels good about the deal over your lifetime really pays off. I think probably the biggest example I can give from my own life, and as you said, this applies to customers, all kinds of things that maybe you don't necessarily think of as a big individual deal. But a while back, I was negotiating a buyout of our biggest competitor for Sharp Communication, a company called Huntsville Radio. They'd been our biggest competitor, kind of our only competitor in the area for a while. We'd been winning that battle. We had just taken a big contract away from them. The owner, interestingly, was actually my third grade teacher. She had inherited the business or bought the business after her dad had passed away. And, you know, a lot of people say to me, like, oh, man, why don't you just keep pounding, right? Just, like, put them out. You know, you don't have to buy that business. You know, you can just put them out, and then you can just go pick up the wreckage, or you can buy it for pennies on the dollar, you know. And
what kind of message is that sending, though? Like, why are people like that?
I don't know. It's this win-lose mentality where it's, you know, you think...
It's almost like everybody's playing a game of poker, right?
Yeah.
And they want to win the hand and let everybody else fold, and they just take all their money. And, like, that's just no way to view it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't know if it comes from, you know, just like... And, I mean, I love athletics, right? But I don't know if it comes from, like, sports or... You know, there are parts of life that are very zero-sum. Got to have a winner, got to have a loser. But outside of those areas and video games and a few other areas, like, there's plenty of room for everybody to win, everybody to get what they want, everybody to be happy. In a lot of cases, what the other side wants might be something besides just pure cash. They might want a certain feeling. They might want to reconcile. They might just want something to be over. They might want a legacy to be carried on. It could be, you know, is that from a customer perspective, they might just want to feel like they're dealing with a good company. You know, we've talked before about how we all kind of feel about buying stuff from Amazon. It's like you get more than you expect, right?
Well, so, and I think in your scenario specifically, like with Huntsville Radio, you know, they may want to make sure that their customers are well taken care of and passing on. And like, you know, for me, that would be big in a deal scenario where I'm selling out, would be making sure that the customers I'm passing along are in good hands.
Yeah, it really was. And like from... And I think also the idea of, hey, we're not going to lose, we're going to pass this on to somebody else who's going to buy us out, was important to them. And, of course, getting out of any, you know, financial problems they were in was attractive too, I'm sure. But, you know, for my side, it was like, then we can be a good a company, a good person in the community. Like, they had been active in the chamber and other places, and Beverly, my friend and my teacher, was well known in those areas. So, you know, And if they just went away, who knows, right? Like, could I have even figured out who all those customers were? I don't really know. Maybe I could have found them, maybe not. A similar situation happened in Birmingham with in our industry, and the smaller shop that was getting beat up, they sold out to a big nationwide competitor. And now the guy that was a lot like me in Birmingham now has this big competitor on his hands, right? But he went into the negotiation, and if he ever listens to this, he'll probably kill me, but he went into the negotiation kind of thinking, oh, I got them right where I want them, right? Like they're going to have to come to me, you know? And that's not always the case. People can find an escape hatch or come up with other ways to do things, and it can hurt you. So if you can find some moral, and this was a pretty good sized deal for me, right? It was the biggest deal I had ever done at the time. And I was looking back at it the other day. I think we're going to end up making like 300-400% on the deal.
Wow.
You know, wow. By the time it's done. And that was 4 years ago, right? So could I maybe push for a better deal or gotten something better? Maybe. Probably, but she wouldn't have felt as good about it. And she walked out of that and was like singing my praises and our praises to the chamber. We won Small Business of the Year in 2015. You know, it was no issues and handing over customer contracts and stuff because she was happy. And
when you have a couple things to look out for in that scenario, right? Like you have a personal relationship with, you said, your third grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you want to maintain that. You just want to flatten somebody, even if they were maybe a little harsh on you in third grade, right? Like, you don't just want to run over that person as retribution, you know? And at the same time, like, you want to send the right message to your customers and the community. You know, if your customers see you just run over somebody like that or maybe treat them poorly, how are they going to feel about doing business with you?
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. And you got to feel good about yourself, right? Like, I was like, hey, I can do this deal. I can still make money. Could I maybe got a higher percentage? Maybe, maybe not. But if you don't feel good about laying your head on the pillow at night, a week later, a year later, 2 years later, was it worth making an extra 50% or 100% when you already made 300-400%, right?
So I have a question, and I'm going to be devil's advocate a little bit. I think Matt, Trey, we, like the three of us, sometimes we talk about these things a lot, doing the right thing, doing mm-hmm. things the right way, thinking about the long-term impact decisions can have. But so we're kind of in a vacuum, I think a little bit of thinking alike. And it is so common, I think as an observer, at least I can say, for people to be ultra aggressive about deals and to go into things with wanting to come out on top as much as possible. And so I'm curious just to pose the question, is there ever a time that it really pays to be aggressive and to be thinking about how can I make the most of this opportunity? And, you know, try to lay aside the emotions of wanting to do things the right way just for this moment. Is just to ask the question, is there ever a time? Is it as you're trying to get deals and you're trying to get new customers, you have to position yourself as the best?
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. there's a difference in coming at something aggressively versus coming at something in a win-lose fashion. But, you know,
and so what is that difference for you?
You know, I mean, I haven't always looked at deals the same way I do now, right? Like, I've learned a lot of lessons in the last, you know, 9 years here. So looking back at some of the scenarios where I went really aggressively after it, and I'm glad I did, because mm-hmm. I didn't even get as far as I should have gotten. But at the time, I was like, I got where I need to be. And that was what was important to me, is getting where I felt like I need to be. It wasn't about pushing the other person to their absolute limit, although I definitely did that sometimes too. But it was about getting where I needed to be. But sometimes I think, you know, like I said, it's almost like you're playing a game of poker, right? And you can't see the other person's cards. But sometimes you have a very good idea of what they've got in their hand. And I think you have to... Sometimes you end up having to be aggressive in order to get a little more information about what they've really got in their hand to find a deal that strikes the balance, because it's really easy if you go into a negotiation to let them win, especially like a vendor scenario, right? Like, we're looking to, you know, purchase nutritional products from this brand. Well, it's really easy for that brand to hold all their cards tight at the beginning, right? And then let me go only so far. All right. And back in the day, you really had to earn that. Like, discounts on products, like, if you weren't there with the volume from the day one, you didn't get the discounts. These days, everybody hands them out like candy. It's just a different industry these days. But back then, they held them really close to the chest, and you had to, like, earn it. So that was what made me go so aggressively into deals with new vendors, is because I was like, I got to get it now or I'll never get it. Like,
and so how did you get it?
I think it was just, you know, making sure to assure them that my priorities were in line with what they wanted to see from me as a brand, right? Like, I wanted to make the most of their dollars as far as what they gave me on deals or, like, on specials, maybe samples for my customers. Like, I'm not just using their dollars frivolously. I'm not just I wasn't always like, if they passed the deal on to me, I wasn't just patting myself with the margin. Like, I was passing it on to my customers when I could.
Okay.
And I think when they see that, and they were seeing that I was rewarding my customers in order to kind of help with volumes, that helped assure them that I wanted to do the right thing. You know, and I could show them examples. You know, over time, I could show them examples of where I had done the same thing so that they could be assured, maybe we're day one, we haven't done business before, that this is what I've done in the past. Like, I had a reputation and a history behind me.
So making the deal, you have to understand what the person on the other side of the table wants.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you get them to share that information with you?
I think that's the biggest piece of it, right? And I think that's what a lot of the kind of hard-driving, negotiating folks miss. I've actually been reading this book recently called Never Split the Difference. It's by this FBI hostage negotiator. So been in some really high pressure negotiating situations, right? And he really says, you know, that over the last 10, 20 years, the FBI has figured out the key in negotiations is to ask questions of the other side, have a lot of empathy, try to get them to actually have some empathy for you, right? Like, talk about your problems and try to get them to see things from your perspective so that you can collaborate and come to a deal. And you know, that's kind of how I've come to think about deals. It's not that you're not trying to get a good deal. It's not that you're not trying to win from your side, but it's, you know, what angle are you coming at it with, right? Are you coming in there with the scalpel and being kind of, you know, skillful with it and trying to, you know, get to some consensus? Are you coming in there with the sledgehammer, right? And just trying to kind of impose your will. Now there's, you know, I will say there's some time and places, like if you're just trying to buy a car, you know, like from a dealership or whatever, I don't, you know, probably nobody there is ever going to know or care if you won that negotiation and pulled a better deal because it was the end of the month and whatever, and you pulled something off. But when you're talking about your vendors, your customers, your partners, even just some individual who you're going to see at the supermarket.
I do want to elaborate on what you just touched on, though, because I think that specifically in the car market, the last time I purchased a vehicle, I left and no one with the dealership seemed happy. Truly, like I got such a good deal when I left. I mean, the sales manager was pissed at me. Like, I mean, visibly pissed at me. And even the rep was like, "Man, you got a great deal. Like, I've never had."
That was the answer to the question. That's when to be aggressive is when you're at the car dealership.
Well, but at the same time, I will tell you, I sent a friend to that same dealership not 4 weeks ago, and you know they were working on their deals and things like that. And I'm like, look. Here's probably a fair margin of room you can get in this deal. You might can go to here, but I really wouldn't advise you to push further than that. Because at the end of the day, what is that 500 over the next 5 to 10 years of you owning this vehicle and your relationship with that dealership? I will tell you that right now they take really good care of me, and some of the prior management is no longer there that doesn't like me because of that deal, right? But at the same time, they've always taken really good care of me, and I appreciate that, especially in spite of that originally deal. And let's be honest, like in a dealership perspective, like they're looking at earning your business long term too. Hopefully you bring your servicing and your checks and your oil changes and your tires and things like that back to the dealership. So they're looking to make more than just that one time sale money on you too. But having somebody I can go to when my tire's flat, if I need an oil change like last minute, whatever the case may be, having that relationship established with them is very big for me. And I've learned over the last several years that having them in my corner was a huge benefit. And they've always been great to me. Like, they've never held it against me other than the people that aren't with the company anymore, right? And so I told them, like, hey, I want you to get a good deal. And I know that they probably have a little more here. But if you push beyond that, your relationship may sour a little bit.
Okay.
And it's really not worth souring that relationship.
So if they were pissed when you left, how did you reconcile that? When you left, did you make the decision, I know they want me to be a long-term customer, I'm going to go back there for all my services?
You know, I'm one of those people who I refer the crap out of everybody. And I made that very clear in the forefront. Like, hey, first of all, like this vehicle doesn't really have this value to me. Like, I'm crazy to even look at spending this much money on a vehicle in the first place. Like, I've never done this before. I don't really want to spend that much money. This is kind of something I've fallen into being okay with, but I'm still not okay with it. And so that was where there was a value disconnect for me, mm-hmm. right? Like, I didn't want to spend that amount of money. This is the amount of money that I was okay with spending, but I still wasn't crazy about it, right? So it had to come down to where, like, I valued this was something I would be willing to do in this deal. And at the same time, it was below what they were willing to do. So they had to make the full compromise. Like, I didn't meet them in the middle there. I made them come to my side. And again, that's where I say, like, I learned that lesson. Like, I got my way, but I didn't feel good about it later.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
You know, I think, Tony, you hit on something a minute ago that I think is so important in any negotiation or making any deal. And this is important for building your customer offer too, right? It's like, you should really know, you know, what's the top three things the other side of the table, what do they want, right? And what's the top three things I want, you know? And where those, where there's not conflict, there's probably room to get disproportionate value. You know, if you're trying to sell your company or your startup or whatever, right? And if, you know, there's equity firm on the other side and they're thinking about deal flow and moving quickly, price is probably important to both of you. But if you're not in a hurry, but they are, you know, maybe you can get more concession on the price side by saying, hey, if you'll, you know, pay this higher price, I'll move and do this deal, you know, in a week or whatever, right? I'll sign the LOI or whatever. So,
yeah, and there's several things you can leververage there. And I think with each deal,
I think a lot of folks, I think they focus on where is there a conflict? Like, oh, they want a lower price and I want a higher price. So they focus on that piece and then they just go back and forth battling over it, right? But you really want to figure out, like, well, what do I not really care about that they do really care about? And now I can get some concessions. The car dealership, it's like the end of the month is like the cliche, right? Or end of the quarter. They're trying to hit some sales quota, you know? You know, if you're trying to buy a home and the other person is like, which that's kind of tough. It's more of a seller's market in Huntsville right now. But if you're, you know, the other person's already moved into a house, right? And, you know, they're kind of caught between house payments. You've got an advantage in negotiating if you're not in a hurry to get into that home.
But,
so,
you know, the thing we talked about kind of before we started the podcast too, though, was that the deal is about more than just the pricing decision, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's about building that relationship and establishing that.
I think people obsess over the price piece.
Absolutely.
And did I win?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Did I win the price?
That's 80-90% of it for most people, right?
Yeah.
But I think when you learn something from each deal, and as you do more and more deals, you realize that it is about so much more than price. Like I said, those relationships, it's about the pricing. It's also about, like, the longevity or support factor if it is somebody that you're going to continue to do business with. But, you know, you said it up front, too. In that relationship, it's about understanding what both parties want. So what do you want out of it, and what do they want out of it? And mm-hmm. it's really hard to put all that on the table. So sometimes, like, you literally do have to just say, like, what would this look like for you in an ideal scenario?
Yes.
If we were to get here, and throwing out some hypothetical scenarios. And then you get to compromise with one another out loud, and you kind of show your cards. And I think that's when you find a mutually beneficial win-win scenario in that deal.
When do you show your cards?
These days, I'm a lot more upfront about it.
Yeah.
You know, and like, so to be very transparent, like, we have certain pricing tiers and margins we need to hit on specific types of products. And so I will straight up tell them, hey, here's where we need to be on a product like this. I will measure things like the ingredient content, the number of servings, things like that.
Once you do that, do you budge?
Do I budge? No. I just it'll be one of those things I'll tell them I have to walk away from, like, quite honestly. Like, I will interview a brand almost before I get into the deal making scenario and say, like, hey, here's where we really need to be on these type of things. Is that something you can do?
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't want to take somebody's dinner off their table. Like, that's not my goal. And I don't want to be in a situation with you as a brand where I'm getting what I want, but you're not happy with it. Because that's, again, not a good scenario for me. Your support for me is terrible at that point. You don't like to deal with me as a customer. And so, like, even if I'm getting what I want out of it, it's not a good working relationship.
Is it the same with new vendors or just vendors and relationships that you already have? So, and the reason I'm asking these questions is specifically for our listeners to kind of gauge what the actual life cycle of a relationship that you're going to be in a deal making relationship with, and then when to kind of show your hand. And Trey, I also really want to hear these answers from you too.
So I'm really big on being a man of my word. And that's one of those things where I've used some different leverage tactics and deals in the past where, for example, in the state of Alabama, we're one of the larger chains of nutrition stores. Typically, if we pick up a brand, a lot of the other stores in the state follow our lead. I don't know if it's that our marketing presence gets out to their territories and people start asking about it, or if they see it and look into it more. But for example, several years ago, we picked up a brand called ProSubs, and I told him, hey, if we can get this pricing, this will work for us. I promise you the entire state of Alabama follows our lead. You have my word on that. And I remember asking him 6 to 9 months later, how does the rest of the state look? And he's like, dude, we are doing so much more in the state of Alabama than we've ever done. Like, it's not just your numbers. And I was like, exactly. And that was what I want to set up for you. I wanted to make sure it could work for us, but I told you it would work on the back end there too. And, you know, I think that's happened with several other vendors, and we know that that happens now. So we use that as part of our leverage tactic because it's not, it's the truth, right? Like, so if we pick up this brand, the rest of the state's going to follow some of our lead here. And so then you're going to get a better impact over the whole state, which Alabama's a tough state for that industry. So it really benefits them. And we're talking about the difference in them maybe doing, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 in sales in a month to doing 20,000 to 30,000 in sales in the state a month. That's how much it will pick up for them. And so it's a tremendous increase in business. Even if they're losing a little bit over here, they'll gain it on the other side.
How about you, Trey? That's awesome, Matt. And it sounds like you're consistent in your personal life and your professional life.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's one thing too, like
being an influencer.
At the same time, like, I've gone to brands and I remember a sales manager coming back and like almost verbally patting me on the back for it. And I said, hey, if we can get here, we will do this volume for you. Like, we will push it for you.
Yeah.
And a year and a half later or something, like, I remember him coming back and we were talking about a new product and he goes, Matt, I really appreciate that I gave you this pricing and then you honored your word on the fact that you were going to grow the brand for me. He's like, not many people do that. And I was like, I mean, at the end of the day, if I get the pricing, but I don't push the brand, you know, and get it out there, what is the benefit anyways? You know,
right.
But at the same time, like, I like to be a man of my word. And I, that's benefited me time over and time over, in being in business. And so I feel like, you know, the more people realize that, like, that's your reputation, you know, and that's again, going into the next deals, like a lot of the deals that have come to the table have been because of reputation too. And so we're working with this vendor. So this one, that's a friend of them, approaches it, right? Because this is a very close knit industry, even as big as it is, you know.
That goes back to what Trey was saying. You never know where you're going to see the same person. People
overlap majorly.
My granddad, you know, had one of these Southern colloquialisms, right? That was, it was something like, the ass you kick today might be the ass you kiss tomorrow.
Yeah.
So be careful.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to answer your question, Tony, and one thing I kind of want to underline for everybody listening is, I mean, we're focused here on like business deals, vendor deals, buying businesses, but really we're just talking negotiating, deal making. I mean, this could apply to your next employer, right? Getting your next job, you're negotiating your salary and terms of your employment. I mean, you know, so I would say the timeline of how long, you know, one of these things can last can be years, can be decades. One kind of unusual example I can give you from my personal life was, let's see, what was that? Six years ago, I got divorced from my wife at the time, and that's the only person you can get divorced from, I suppose. And, you know, we were trying to figure out the divorce, and it was like, even my attorney was like, oh, you could get like a better deal out of this or whatever, but, you know, I just did something I thought was fair. We did something we thought was fair and didn't go to court or anything. And like, she was happy with it. She's still happy with it today. Like, we're friends. We've got a daughter together that's 10 years old. And, you know, and like the divorce was over in like weeks, right? Could have drug out months. You see people do this. They go fight and they're telling you about it. And like, their mental and emotional energy is burned up because they're like in this court battle. And, you know, and you literally can spend 30, 40 grand on an attorney.
And I was going to say, so not just the cost there dollar wise and maybe what you lose or gain, the cost in the attorneys, but also the cost in emotional energy and time. Like, that's another
cost
of the deal,
right?
That people don't think about.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And, you know, and that was what I thought about. And like, the divorce was finalized, and like, me and my now wife, we met, and it was like love at first sight and all the corny cliches, right? But I mean, we met like a week after the divorce was final, you know, and it's like, that wouldn't have happened if I would have took this hardball approach, you know? And so, you know, I think you got to ask yourself in each of these negotiations, whether it's something unusual, like a spouse or family member or an employment relationship or a vendor, you know, how long is this person going to be in my life? Even if I think I know how long they're going to be in my life, are they going to pop up somewhere one day? Are they going to influence people who are important to me? I mean, we all want to just, kind of to Tony's point earlier, we all want to have this high-minded, we want to just do the right thing. But in a lot of cases, you can make the morally right thing. A lot of cases, it can be the best thing for you financially, or because you hit on it, right? The opportunity cost of getting in some nasty thing or battling something out with somebody. You can't go build a business. You can't go, you know, and so somebody said to me one time, you know, you can fight over how to slice up the pie, or you can just go bake a bigger pie, you know, and that's really, I think, the overall mentality that we're talking about here is
yeah.
Sure.
Not having that kind of limited zero sum mindset. Mm-hmm. The only way for me to get something is to take it from Matt.
Yeah. And I think too, when you're looking at that deal scenario, you have to keep in mind, you know, if you feel good about the deal or if you're bending over for that one time setup. Because again, if this is a customer, you know, let's say from a business to a customer perspective, that you may see for the next 5 to 7 years coming back, you know, to your store, whether it be an online storefront, your app, whatever else, how do you want them to feel about you? And how do you want to feel about that customer, right? If they feel good about you, but you don't feel good about that customer, it's still not a good setup. You know, if they're coming back time and time again and expecting that crazy discount, let's say, that they first got, but you don't feel good about it and it irks you every time, you didn't set up the deal right.
Yeah, if you just use some kind of pressure tactics to get the close, right, to get some ink on paper, and, you know, over weeks and months, that pressure you use to get the close, that pressure is going to be gone.
And a drive
and to somebody's just going to say, hey, I got screwed here, and they're going
to
be pissed.
And there's nothing wrong with a drive to urgency, but you better set it up in the right manner.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. And it comes back to, you know, asking questions. Actually, you know, I see so many people that they just come into negotiation and they just want to talk, right? They just want to like kind of pound the table and talk about what they want. And that's just not how to get it done.
You know, and I will tell you that more recently I was working out some different pricing because a line changed up their pricing completely. And I was talking with the rep and he was just super transparent with me and said, Matt, I'll be honest with you. If I go here, I don't make any money on doing your orders and I don't work for free. And I really respected that he was very transparent and said that out loud and forward to me because I don't want him to work for free either, you know? And I think that's one of those things that anywhere in business or any transaction, we can appreciate that someone wants to make money of some kind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we don't always want to set their level of how much money they're making, and maybe we don't need to know how much they're making. But at the same time, like, I got to make sure that this deal is worth your while, because if it's not worth his time to key my orders for that product, he's not going to do it. So I never get my product, or I have to go somewhere else to get it, right?
Yep.
So that's just not a good scenario. So then where do we go from there? I mean, that's something where we've got to compromise. We've got to talk it out. But I appreciate that transparency, you know, in that kind of situation, because then no one's pressured. We're not leaving all these pink elephants in the rooms of the what ifs and ands and how I feel. And their feelings are backed in every corner and you have no idea what's going on. And so when someone's tense with you, what does it come down to? If it's worth it for them, right?
Yeah.
How they feel about it. And so those are the different factors that sometimes, like I said, you got to show your cards and lay them on the table. And so sometimes don't be afraid to throw those on the table.
And it's so, I found it so important to listen, you know, because people will try to sort of, sometimes I think people aren't even aware of what's important to them. Or in a lot of cases, people, they think it's a negotiation. So they're almost trying to hide what's important to them, which is really the opposite of what you should do. But I can't tell you how many times now in my life, probably a dozen different times where it's been some kind of negotiation, and someone has just made a little comment at some point in the conversation, and I'm thinking of one right now I can't tell you about yet, but they just made some comment, and I said, aha, that's what's important to them, right? That's what'll close this deal. But they didn't come to the table saying, hey, this is what I want.
That's a great
Instead,
point.
They said, you know, we were talking about something else, and they're like, well, hey, I'm really concerned about this, right? Or I'd really like this to happen on this timeline, or I'm concerned about this other company or whatever. And I think, you know, you hear this a lot of different places, but listening, asking questions are so powerful. You know, this guy named Josh Waitzkin, who was the basis of Searching for Bobby Fischer. He was a chess prodigy. Now he's like a hedge fund advisor. But he's also become like a UFC MMA guy, and he trains with Marcelo Garcia, who's like this well-known guy. And they had this saying that Garcia fighting him in mixed martial arts is like fighting a dinner jacket. It's like you can never quite get a hold of the guy, right? Because it's like a jiu-jitsu kind of thing. He uses your own strength against you. And, you know, I think that's what good negotiating is like. It's not coming in with your knuckles bared and punching somebody in the nose.
Yeah, I agree. And I do want to add that, you know, there was another conversation with a distributor, so multiple different products that they sell here, where they came in and were like, you know, Matt, I keep suggesting this line to you and this line to you, but you never buy it. Like, I've bent over backwards trying to make sure we get all these things in order for you. I go to bat with you for vendors. Can you throw me a bone here every now and then? And I felt bad for him because it was a genuine ask. And it was one of those things where I did want to throw him that bone. And I just said, you know, explicitly, hey, I appreciate that you do that. However, you know where I have to be on these products to survive. Because if I don't get that, then I don't survive anymore. And then you don't get any orders from me. And I was like, that's not a threat. That's just the fact of the business. Like, I have to be here to survive. And if I'm not here to survive and balance it out, then I can't continue to send you business. And then you don't get any business rather than adding on to the top. I was like, if we can find something in this realm, I'm happy to work with you. Like, please keep sending these things my way. And I'll review them every time. And I'll be fair about it. But you know where I have to be. And I just... You know, I have that line in the sand that it's a, like, I'm going to survive in business line in the sand, not a ideal scenario line in the sand, right? They know that, too. Like, I've given them both. I've said, hey, here's where I have to be. Here's where I'd like to be. And, you know, sometimes they can match the like to be's, right? And sometimes it's just that line in the sand. And when it falls under that, you know, it's okay to say no. And that's where, like, I've liked to show my cards because then they understand it. So...
I was always told come in with an offer where if it's any worse than that, you wouldn't want it, right? And then you can never be like, oh, man, well, I wish I'd offered this, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like I said, you've got to make sure that when you're in that deal scenario, at the end of the day, you want to work with that customer again,
mm-hmm.
Both from an attitude standpoint and relationship as well as from that pricing and, like, this makes financial sense for me, right? Guys, thanks for listening in. If you have any input on deals, I would super love to hear this. Both your examples of deals or just any input you have on our conversation here.
Questions you like
over.
To ask
yeah,
people
questions you'd like
when you're
to
at the
ask
table.
Too. Because we have, you know, not just between the three of us, but anybody else we've brought on the podcast, like, I guarantee there's been thousands and thousands of deals that we've all come in contact with. But there still may be something we can learn or something we can expel that we've experienced in the past. So email those questions over to podcast@urbanengine.org. Thanks again for listening with us.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.